dedicated to HBO's Game of Thrones and George R.R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire book series. You're listening to Podcast Winterfell. Now, here's your host, Matt Murdock.
Mace Tyrell looks like the curator of a small-town historical society who patiently gazes out the window for potential visitors all day long, then sighs and flips the sign to closed. Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. Hey, everybody, it's Matt Murdock here. And I'm doing what I do best, not being a prognosticator or a predictor or a theorizer or any of that stuff, but instead being the guy who tells you what you heard as far as music goes, right? That's what I do best. I think we can all agree on that. Welcome to Podcast Winterfell. It is the Clef Notes for the Season 7 finale. Not just a finale talk. Not just a Clef Notes, but a finale Clef Notes. So, if you haven't seen the last episode of Season 7 of Game of Thrones, what the heck are you doing here? Why are you here? I'm going to be talking about the music, but I'll also be talking about the story. So if you haven't seen it, go watch. Come back after you have. Little bit of business up front. Podcast Winterfell is part of the DVR Podcast Network, and now that Season 7 is over, go to dvrpodcast.com to see what other great podcasts that the network is producing for other good television shows. I think Mike Hall is doing one. I think Tim is doing one. Check them all out at dvrpodcast.com. And remember that Podcast Winterfell is also continuing to give you content throughout the long night of this off season, as is evidenced by this release. So please continue to support Podcast Winterfell and the DVR Podcast Network by becoming a Patreon patron. Go to patreon.com/DVR and pledge your support for the network today. As far as contacting the podcast, you can always follow Podcast Winterfell at Winterfell Pod. You can also follow the DVR Podcast Network at DVR Podcast. If you want to contact the podcast via email, podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. And if you want to hit me up directly, to tell me that I'm not funny or that my music analysis sucks, you can always find me on Twitter at Musical Concepts, all one word. And I think that takes care of all of the business. Thanks in advance for listening to this, what will probably be a slightly lengthy podcast about the music of Season 7, Episode 7, The Dragon and the Wolf. Here we go.
Clef Notes, an analysis of the music in HBO's Game of Thrones.
You know, several years back, I used to podcast about the TV show Lost, and that's where I looked at the score of Michael Giacchino regarding that television show. And when the series finale aired, I did a full podcast covering each musical cue in the finale. Now, naturally, this isn't the series finale for Game of Thrones, but it looks like it is going to be the last episode that we get for quite a while, and there are lots of great cues in this episode to talk about. So I'm going to be going through each of these musical cues, or at least the ones that matter the most in the finale, piece by piece. And let's begin at the beginning, the piece that kind of sets the table for the meeting at the Dragon Pit as we look at the positioning or approaching of all sides. Lots of people were actually hitting me up on Twitter after this piece aired, already asking me to do a Clef Notes on it. So here's the cue that got everybody going. I cut the dialogue out as best as I could to save a little bit of time. Here you go.
Thank you. always been a champion of the downtrodden.
All right, so really the first part of this cue is merely the Dracarys or the Unsullied theme, but each chord is held out quite a bit longer than normal. And that theme was, of course, first introduced when Daenerys burned Krasnus and freed the Unsullies. Here's a little bit of that cue from the Season 3 soundtrack. And hopefully you can recognize a similarity. Basically, instead of the regular version that we're used to with the Unsullied or with the dragons, like this, you get this longer version like this. But something that makes us unique is that our worlds are colliding here. The Lannisters and all of Daenerys's members are all meeting up in the same place. The worlds are colliding. So we actually get a little bit of the Reigns of Castamere theme going on top of the Dracarys theme. It does sound a little weird though, right? The way the two are interacting together. And that's because Ramin is actually using two different key centers for each part. I mean, it's a great piece of kind of psychoacoustical flaunting in a way. You see, if I play the Reigns theme in the key that the Reigns melody would fit it, it would sound like this. So that makes it feel differently, right? Because where you hear the key being is in a different place, even though the melody notes are the same as in the Dracarys piece. But you might want to just look at it this way. If you heard the melody of the Reigns in the actual same key that the Dracarys theme was in, then the melody of the cue would sound like this. Big difference, right? So instead, Ramin puts the Reigns theme against the Dracarys theme in the two different keys at the same time. And that, of course, anytime you have it two keys playing at the same time, creates a super amount of tension. And because of that musical tension in this, that makes us as viewers feel more tense or excited for what's going to happen when all of these characters are finally in the exact same place. Pretty brilliant. And in addition, functionally, the Dracarys theme, that key acts as kind of an anchor, but its function changes as we get to the end of the cue, and a little bit more on that in a moment. So after the first little statement, we have a little conversation between Jaime and Bronn before we get to the Dothraki, which we heard back at the end of Season 5 when they first surrounded Daenerys, and a little bit in Season 6. It's staying in the same key that the Dracarys theme is, and by the way, if you don't know what I mean by same key, here's a quick explanation. In Western music, not the music of the Middle East or the Orient, per se, but I'm talking about Russian, European, US, etc., Western music, we have 12 tonal centers that we call keys. A key dictates which notes kind of sound right or wrong to us, or they create tension or release. And so far, everything has been in the same key except the Rain's melody, which is why we had all of that, quote, tension. Anyway, now this Dothraki comes in, and there's really not a whole lot to comment on here. I mean, it's really just one chord and two notes, but it is recognizable, again, from the end of season 5 and a little bit in season 6, and that makes it cool. It also does a very good job of setting up a shift in the theme and the key center. And that's when we hear one of Daenerys' more popular themes come into play, and that's as Tyrion and the gang are approaching King's Landing in the boat. This theme. But it's that key shift that actually makes the tension even better in terms of setting up for us the question, ooh, what's going to happen? And here's how that key shift affects everything. For the entire sequence up to the Dany theme, we've been centered around this note as the key. And now we shift to a different key being played underneath the Dany theme. But when we shift the key that we thought was the kind of home kind of sound that it had been all along, the sound that all of the music that was previously based on, it actually begins to function as what we call the dominant function. And so now, this same note that we started on, actually, instead of feeling like a finish, feels like it's leading to something more, which creates even more tension because it doesn't feel resolved. That is the function of a dominant chord, to lead to a finish, not to be the finish. And so, even if we don't realize it psychologically, with the music, subconsciously, Ramin is making us wonder, ooh, what's going to happen next? And this isn't the only time that he does this in this episode. In fact, he does it in the next sequence of the scenes in the pit. And I'll explain a little bit more about the dominant function and how that affects us there. But let's go ahead and get to the pit, because there's some nice reconnecting moments on the walk, which kind of eases the tension a little bit as different characters are getting ready to interact or interacting. But once entering the pit, the tension does rise again. But first, the table has to be set. And this is as Tyrion and the gang first walk in. Now, this piece is actually a variation on the main theme of the show, and we've heard Ramin use this variation before several times during the course of the series. It's using the same what we call rhythmic motives, but different notes, meaning that the rhythms or the beat are the same, but maybe the notes are a little different. So where the main motive in this sequence would normally be here, we instead get this. And it makes perfect sense that we get this theme here. This meeting literally is the Game of Thrones being played out. But the outcome is unknown, so the variation makes sense in that way. And it establishes this key as the home key for the entire sequence. So what does Ramin do to answer that? Well, he brings in both Cersei and Dany's entrances on the dominant chord of that established key, and the dominant chord would be this. Psychologically, because they're both based out of the same key, it also puts both themes on equal footing in that dominant key. So it doesn't really create a dynamic of one being higher than the other. If I put one in one key and one in another, you might psychologically get a sense that one is better than the other. Because they both are just in the dominant, it creates a tension, because the dominant chord makes you want something more. In our case, we want to know what's going to happen. But I'll demonstrate that in just a second. First, we have Cersei's entrance. And then, of course, we have Dany's entrance. And yes, Daenerys really does technically have a bigger entrance, and her theme is more augmented in that regard. But both keys of both pieces are the same, and that's what creates a psychological equal footing in the characters, as well as to create the more tension because of the dominant. We had the first table setting piece in one key, and then the two themes in the dominant of that main. Again, why? Because even though we don't know it consciously, that dominant function of the two themes, keys, of Cersei and Dany make us want to know what's going to happen next. It's a great way to make you want some kind of resolution without even knowing it from the musical side. But maybe here's the best way to explain why the dominant chord or the dominant key is so powerful. Dominant always feels like it has to lead to a root key of some kind. For instance, the two themes we just heard in this key make us want that key to resolve to this key, where we started. Because we had already established that when Tyrion and the gang walked in. Our mind subconsciously is keeping track of that. Or here's an example. Just like in the Beatles song When I'm 64, if I play that melody and stop on the dominant, I mean, man, doesn't stopping there feel like we need to finish the song? Doesn't it feel incomplete? I gotta finish it just because it's driving me crazy. And with these keys, think of the first piece with Tyrion being the home key, and Cersei and Dany's themes being where I stopped in When I'm 64 that drove us all crazy until I resolved it. Ramin is doing the exact same thing with your brain, but he's just doing it over several minutes with three different themes. What it does is it makes us super interested in what happens next because we don't feel resolved by the music. You're letting Ramin in your head against your will, and he's messing with you, man, and you don't even know it. That's one of the secret powers of really good scoring. So let's move on. Here we are. Everyone's there. Tension in the pit. Somewhat of a buffoonish exchange involving Euron, actually a couple of them, and it's all part of Cersei's plan to make him look like a coward, I guess. And then we get to the meat of this parlay. Again, worlds are colliding, house-wise, music-wise, every-wise. And then the Hound introduces the threat to everyone, and we get some really scary chords as the White kind of goes for Cersei. But during Jon's explanation, we get this.
We can destroy them by burning them. And we can destroy them with dragonglass. If we don't win this fight, then that is the fate of every person in the world.
Do those sounds in the horns, the chords, they sound familiar? Oh yeah, we've heard that before. And we've heard similar instrumentation. But the fun thing is, it's also some of the very first chords we ever heard in the beginning of this series. Here's from the first musical cue of Season 1, Episode 1. Yep, the White Walker theme, that theme that played when we didn't even understand what the threat was yet. And what you have to really love is that over the seasons, Ramin has kind of shifted those chords from the faint bellish kind of synthy instruments that we heard in this to the harsh brass instrumentation. When they were faint bells, they represented the fact that White Walkers were more of a mystery or even a fable to most of Westeros, right? The brass and the strength and the articulation of the chords now makes them more real, more threatening. Not so much for us as viewers. I mean, we know that the White Walkers are scary, bad mofos, right? The change in instrumentation over the seasons has actually been a representation of more and more of the people of Westeros recognizing that the threat is indeed real. And I love that. But once the White is destroyed, Cersei agrees to help under, you know, certain conditions. Conditions that Jon just can't abide by, and we get Cersei's exit music. Now this piece, as well as the next one right after this, when Tyrion goes to meet Cersei and ends up standing in front of Jaime, are kind of what I call incidental pieces. They're not so much thematic as they are more like transitional, or to set a mood. For instance, in this piece, we have notes rising in odd intervals to create tension, to make us wonder, okay, now what? But it's really just kind of a one-off, and it's not really worth the effort to analyze. I will play it for you, though. Here it is.
I cannot serve two queens. And I've already pledged myself to Queen Daenerys of House Targaryen.
Similarly, after Brienne scolds Jaime and then Tyrion tells Jon and Dany that he's going to go talk to Cersei, and we follow him into the Red Keep, we get another piece of music that merely helps to transition to the scene with Jaime, but doesn't really function in a thematical sense. Here's that piece. There's really not a lot to talk about there. I mean, it had sufficient emotion for Tyrion, as well as tension in it to function, but there's really nothing to write home about it for me. But then we do get something interesting after the Jaime and Tyrion talk, and he makes his way into Cersei's chambers. We get this piece, and see if you can figure out why I say it's interesting as you listen. I'll give you my answer to that on the other side.
I suppose we should say goodbye, one idiot to another.
I shouldn't be surprised. I suppose she's your kind of woman.
Figure it out? The reason I find it interesting is because of that little four-note figure. It's actually a snippet from the theme of the Reigns of Castamere. But what I find interesting is that he just used that little snippet and then moved that snippet through several key centers in order to create more tension. It's the using of the snippets that is most fascinating to me. When you think about it, the Lannister legacy is unresolved right now. Cersei's trying to hold onto the Iron Throne. Tyrion is trying to take it from her and giving it to Daenerys. So even though Tyrion is trying to come to her to find common ground, their own issues are not resolved. So in a way, by not completing the theme of the Reigns of Castamere, Ramin is actually accenting those unresolved issues. Now, I will admit that this is not a given as to why Ramin did this. I mean, he may have just thought it was cool, or he had other reasons to use only the snippets. This is really kind of more my interpretation than a definitive answer. But I do like that as an explanation, that by not completing the theme, you don't give either of the two characters a feeling of having more power over the situation than the other. And then we have a similar thing happen when Tyrion realizes that Cersei is pregnant. But the issue of whether she will help or not is, of course, still unresolved. So we get those snippets again, and this time, just like before, because the melody is incomplete, it adds more tension as to who of these two, Cersei or Tyrion, will cave in to the other. And that's when we go back to the dragon pit with Dany and Jon.
Get on a boat. Take those who matter.
You're pregnant.
Then after that, when Cersei returns to the pit, we get a piece that initially kind of uses a red herring with these dark horn chords as Cersei says she will not pull back to the capital. And that's just to throw us off of her statement that she will help, which is what she comes to. But I do love those chords. And then, just like when Tyrion and his gang first arrived, we get a variation of the main theme motive. Except this is the variation that we get. We get all of the good main theme stuff being varied to make it like Cersei is actually helping and that Jon's mission might be a success. And musically, this also gives real symmetry to all of the Dragon Pit stuff from the beginning to the end, using the main theme. It also provides a great transition to Winterfell as well.
My armies will not stand down. I will not pull them back to the capital. I will march them north to fight alongside you in the Great War. The darkness is coming for us all. We will face it together. And when the Great War is over, perhaps you'll remember I chose to help. No promises or assurances from any of you. I expect not. Call our banners. All of them.
Even though Cersei was ultimately Cersei and her words were pretty empty, it was nice to hear a little bit of hero music behind her words for once, right? So now we are in Winterfell and it's time for that creep to play his little game. And we get this very, very dark theme where Littlefinger keeps getting into Sansa's head, or at least seemingly getting into her head about Arya.
She could want me dead because she thinks I wronged my family.
Why did you come to Winterfell?
Mm-hmm.
But now we can actually call this a theme as well. And I don't know what to call it. Maybe the manipulation theme? Because it seems to occur when either Littlefinger or Sansa are trying to manipulate someone. The melody itself has notes from the main theme or even the Stark theme. They're just put in a little bit different order. But why am I calling it a theme? Well, we've actually heard this same melody played before, back in season 4, when Sansa lied to the council about Littlefinger pushing Lysa out the moon door. The melody was in a different key. And the resolution was to the Chaos is a Ladder melody instead of the dark brooding chords that we have in this episode. But the melody was established about either Sansa or Littlefinger manipulating someone way back in season 4. And here is that season 4 scene to refresh your memory. Listen for that melody that I just played.
And then one day she saw him kiss me.
It is Sansa.
It was a peck on the cheek, Lord Royce, nothing more.
Of course, the thing is that if Sansa never manipulates anyone else again, then this theme is probably over, right? Since Littlefinger was killed in this episode. But it was still a really nice callback by Ramin, right? That takes us back to Dragonstone, where while you would think you would get healthy doses of the Jon and Dany theme, there's really only one snippet as a transition to the Theon and Jon scene. Not a whole lot to say there. I mean, I've already taken a look at the Jon and Dany theme earlier this season, and it's certainly not the last time that we're going to hear it in this episode. But here is the piece, just in case you haven't been paying attention to nearly every musical cue in nearly every scene with Jon and Dany this season.
We sail together.
John.
But now we get to one of my personal favorite parts of the episode and one of my favorite musical cues as well in the episode. The Theon John stuff reestablishes the Greyjoy theme as opposed to the Euron Greyjoy theme. If you recall, I did a Clef Notes back in season 6 regarding the differences. This scene, though, also begins to mark Theon's true redemption. I mean, he had that relapse a little while back in this season, and now he's got his redemption. Okay, enough with the bad jokes, right? Anyway, this first cue with Jon and Theon, I mean, at first places the theme very subtly and somberish as Theon is trying to find his footing with Jon. And then Jon's words stir feelings in Theon that makes the volume of the theme swell, just as Theon's confidence swells.
You don't need to choose. You're a Greyjoy. And you're a Stark.
Mm-hmm.
and I was Ramsay's prisoner. Yara.
She needs me now.
So why are you still talking to me?
I love how Ramin does use dynamics to generate emotion, just as much as he uses harmony, as much as he uses anything else. But it's really the next cue that really, really gets me. And I'm going to break this cue down into two parts, because really, essentially, the fight itself has two parts. And the music changes dramatically after the Ironborn guy realizes that kneeing Theon isn't going to be working. The first part before that is so amazing to me, though. Every time Theon gets knocked down, he just keeps getting back up, and I was feeling so much for him. I was starting to really root for him. And a good part of that was the really, really dissonant way that Ramin was presenting the Greyjoy theme as Theon was getting up time after time, a little less together than the time before. We know that the main riff for the Greyjoy theme is this. But during the first part of the fight, Ramin changes one single note, and because of this kind of really weird chord that he puts it against, it makes it seem like things are not going to go well for Theon. The change in the melody sounds like this. And then near the end of the first part of the cue, we get the second part of the Greyjoy melody. Theon is gaining resolve. He's trying to find himself. He keeps getting back up, and that's what makes you root for him even more. But when you listen to this cue, make sure to listen for this one note change. And how that makes everything seem off or lost for Theon. It's helping to increase your awareness that it seems like it's falling apart for Theon, and let's face it, we hate to see that.
Run away, little Theon. It's what you do best.
How my heart was just breaking for Theon, because he was finally redeeming himself and just getting the snot beat out of him because of it. But when the whole knee gag happens, which was funny in a way, I guess, even though I don't really see how that made Theon a better fighter than he was before. But anyway, the next part of the cue afterward was amazing in the way the music helped to actually signify Theon's redemption just as much as the action. First off, remember way back in Season 2 when Theon executed Sir Roderick at Winterfell, and also when he, of course, raised the farm boys up as Bran and Rickon to the people? Do you remember those really dissonant arpeggiating chords? I mean, it was a great musical representation about how Theon was losing himself as the good human being that he could be. He was committing atrocities that he never should have been committing because he had chosen to be an Ironborn, which he really, as John has pointed out, he's just as much a Stark as he is an Ironborn. But here's one of those scenes with those strange arpeggiating chords to demonstrate what I'm talking about.
I told you what would happen. All of you.
Well, once Theon is starting to win the fight, in this episode, we hear these chords in rhythm again, but this time they're more organized. They're less dissonant. They're more determined. It musically shows that Theon is coming back from that dark and then cowardice place that he's been in ever since season 2. He's actually redeeming himself, and the fact that the chords are less dissonant and more in key tells us psychologically that it is okay to root for Theon. And hey, I get it. Just like the Jaime thing, it's hard to forgive Theon for all he did. But where Jaime just lost a hand, Theon is kind of completely lost himself. And you have to root for him as a human being to find himself again, don't you? Or maybe you don't. But I will say that this cue sure had me rooting for him.
Not for me. For Yara!
Oh my gosh, I just love that cue. You have the percussion giving us Theon's determination, the chord arpeggios starting a little bit dissonant at first, but then firmly resolving to being in key. You have the strong presentation of the melody. It was all just so beautiful, and it had me fist pumping for Theon. And then the one change that totally musically redeems Theon. I'm talking about the chords underneath that changes things from dark to triumphant. Normally, the chords under the melody, as we've heard many, many times before, goes like this. But by harmonizing the melody to what we call its relative major key, we end up getting this triumphant sound. And that makes us feel happy because we're hearing a major chord as opposed to the scared or sad way the minor chord makes us feel. It was just an amazingly totally brilliant move, and it made me feel like Theon's redemption has actually finally happened. Like I said, you don't have to forgive Theon if you don't want to, but to me, it certainly feels like Ramin has forgiven him. And once again, this was one of my favorite moments of the episode, both because of the story for Theon, but especially musically. And with that, we go from one of the more satisfying moments for me musically to one of the more satisfying moments for me story-wise. Many fans of Sansa, and I am one of those, have wanted her to be able to beat Littlefinger at his own game, and now in this episode we finally see that realized. And Littlefinger's demise is encapsulated musically by his own theme, the Chaos is a Ladder theme. I remember a long time ago when I believed that Lysa Arryn's letter to Catelyn was actually true, back in season 1 and even season 2, I used to call this theme the Sinister Lannister theme. But in season 3, it did become apparent that this was very much a Littlefinger theme. It's a theme that we've all become very aware of over the years, but there is a couple of things about this particular cue of it that I am very appreciative of. First, there is a variation of the harmony of it, meaning the accompanying chords are different than what we're used to. And as I said earlier in this podcast, we see lots of examples of that in this particular episode, as demonstrated by Ramin. Second, and most foremost, is the use of the dynamics of it. What I mean by dynamics, again, is the overall volume of the music in the context of everything else. A good film score makes you feel the theme, even if the theme is way in the background. And that's actually what's happened here. You felt Littlefinger's plan fall apart as Sansa and Arya and Bran all turned on him, exposing him for who he truly was. But the dialogue was what was important, of course. The theme being dynamically very much in the background with the changed chords let you know that this was his end without superseding the dialogue that explained why he was at his end. Very nicely done.
You told our mother this knife belonged to Tyrion Lannister. But that was another one of your lies. It was yours.
And that brings us to our next cue. This is the one where Jaime and Cersei part ways, accompanied by that one theme that you all seem to like so much, The Light of the Seven. Again, my first impression of it
in the season 6 finale was, well, to not really be all that impressed. My first impression of it was not all that favorable, but it was very popular among the viewers. I have to say that the arrangement in this particular scene did make me actually like the theme more. In fact, probably if the theme had originally been presented this way in season 6, I would have liked it just as much as the rest of you. It's just that in last year's finale, it came with the piano and this arrangement. I'm sorry, it just didn't work for me the way it worked for many of you. But just like Ramin had reworked the Littlefinger Chaos is a Ladder theme in the last cue, he reworks the theme this time around with Jamie and Cersei to some pretty fantastic results, in my opinion.
You plotted with Euron Greyjoy without telling me the commander of your armies.
And you conspired with Tyrion. The man who murdered our father without telling me, your queen.
I didn't conspire
with him. You met with him in secret without my consent. You planned to promote my enemy's interests. That is the definition of conspiracy.
I pledged to ride north. I intend to honor that pledge.
And that would be treason.
Treason?
Disobeying your queen's command, fighting with her enemies. What would you call it?
The main melody is, of course, there. But in this version, the instrumentation is absolutely fantastic, using strings instead of the piano. And there is some reharmonization and even some tweaking of the melody that makes for some absolutely fantastic tension. For instance, before the main statement of the theme when Jamie walks out, as they talk, and as you heard in the clip, the melody is modified slightly to climb at the end of each phrase, which helps build the tension of the scene leading up to Jamie's walking out. Love that. It really helps to set everything up for the drama of Jamie walking out. And when Jamie does walk, then we get the light reharmonization that makes things seem like they're kind of unresolved. For instance, the main harmonization that we've heard for the Light of the Seven before this scene has been along the lines of this, for the most part. But in this scene, instead of starting on the tonic, meaning starting with the main note of the key that they're playing in, the harmony starts an interval of a fourth away. This creates an entirely different emotion, because rather than being at the beginning of something, you're now kind of thrown into the middle of something. Again, the melody is exactly the same, but the chords underneath can create different emotions. And all because instead of using this note to harmonize the beginning of the melody, he used this note. And then, as if that isn't enough to make you think, wow, is Jamie really leaving Cersei? Is this actually happening? Will she let him live? Then Ramin lets the tension linger even longer by the way he sets up the ending of the theme. He does this reharmonization of the end. And he just leaves it hanging there until he uses the beginning of the next tune to resolve it. Because, I mean, come on. I'm betting after most of you heard that walk down, you're just dying to hear this note to resolve it all. That's the same way as it was with the When I'm 64 example earlier, right? And that's what I mean by using harmony to create tension, because we want resolution in our music psychology. So not resolving something musically leaves us hanging. But fortunately, for our own sanity this time around, Ramin does resolve this piece when it's clear that Jaime is not going to turn around. He then starts the Game of Thrones main theme in the same key as the snow starts to fall on King's Landing. It's very slow, and it's the fulfillment of what seems to be a requirement for Ramin Djawadi in every season finale, having at least one vocal or choral type piece. And I'm not a big fan of using vocals, but this particular one was just haunting enough, I guess, that I didn't really mind it all that much. And that gets us back to Winterfell, where Sam and Bran are going to put it all together regarding Jon Snow. And we get another presentation of that new theme, the one that I've called Jon and Dany theme all season. And I'm really not going to break it down because I've already discussed it on just about any musical segment I've done all season for Podcast Winterfell or for my own Game of Thrones blog. But this version, which is entitled The Truth, on the Season 7 official soundtrack, is definitely the most complete and definitive version of the theme to date. And I do really like it, but I just don't feel like I need to talk about it all that much anymore. But here it is for you to enjoy.
Jon isn't really my father's son. He's the son of Rhaegar Targaryen and my aunt, Lyanna Stark. He was born in a tower in Dorne. His last name isn't really Snow. It's Sand.
He's not.
Thank you. John's real name?
His name is Aegon Targaryen. You have to protect him. Promise me, Ned.
He's the heir to the Iron Throne.
Very, very nicely done, of course. But for me, it's actually the cue from the next scene at Winterfell that really, really gets me. And I'm talking about the playing of the Stark theme as Sansa and Arya have their little talk. It has a slightly different harmonization, and that harmonization seems to offer just a little bit of hope, but at the same time, a bittersweetness regarding a family coming back together after having all experienced such a great amount of tragedy. Here's that cue.
In winter, we must protect ourselves. Look after one another.
Father.
I just love that cue. I mean, there is hope in that cue. There's hope of the pack surviving. And at the same time, there is a sadness because they are left with nothing but the memories of their father. And this is just yet another demonstration of how harmony can really alter the mood of an already established melody. We have chords going under this piece that are taken from the melodic minor as opposed to what the piece usually has, which is the pure minor. And you don't really need me to explain the difference to you regarding those scales themselves, but because of that change, we have chords that are typically minor now being major. The 4-chord and the 5-chord in support of the melody both become major. And as we've said many times on Clef Notes before, major chords are usually happier or more hopeful chords than minor chords. But this is great also. Because of the way that Ramin stacks the chords in the order and where they are in relation to the melody, there also is a slight dissonance. When you have notes closer together on the scale played at the same time, then it does create a dissonance. But the major part of it makes it more bittersweet rather than scary or tense. And that's the key to this whole thing, is where the chords are placed against the melody and what kind of chords are used. Let me just replay that harmonization. So you have that. And again, the location of the notes in relation to each other can have just as much of an effect on you emotionally as the types of chords that they are. Just so many different ways for Ramin to just pull at your strings one way or the other. And he does it very well. But then we get to the more pronounced part of that melody, and we return to the pure minor. So it feels like the family again, right? And we get these ascending chords rather than the usual chord progression. And that also makes you feel like House Stark may be all right in the end. I just will never cease to be amazed by how differently and how well Ramin has used this Stark theme to give the audience a full spectrum of emotions over the course of 7 seasons. But of course, the cue doesn't really end with just the Stark theme. We shifted then to Bran in the tree, and you heard more music as he was warging into more ravens, and we saw Eastwatch. And there's some slight hints of both the Wall theme and the White Walker themes buried within that, but it's still basically just kind of an incidental piece to help get you back to the Wall. And then in the next cue, where Beric and Tormund see the White Walkers approaching, you definitely will hear the White Walker theme. And it will be pronounced by the low brass amid this very chromatically rising string section. Chromatically meaning half step by half step. Not really within key, just within note to note, as in between as you can get in Western music anyway. The pitch rises, and that creates the tension as they approach, and the varied chromaticism creates an extra bit of dissonance to heighten all of that tension. And then we, of course, have the big percussion as the army comes to a halt.
It's a long way down.
Yeah. Crows keep telling me I'll get used to it.
And of course, that slight break allows tension to build until the horror of the Night King on a dragon is in your face. And the first part, as the Night King and his dragon start to destroy the Wall, goes on a riff that is ultimately used under this crazy, crazy modified version of the main theme, which I will talk about after we listen to this.
Come on! Run!
that's just one of my favorite pieces, and I'm so glad that it's kind of like the last musical taste in my mouth to last me until the next season comes, whenever that is. The piece really demonstrated how well Ramin can tell a story musically on multiple levels at the same time. You have the dragon destroying the wall, for crying out loud. It's coming down, and then you have the main theme. Yes, that is actually the main theme. It's just set to this really, really weird scale. It's what we musicians call a half-whole scale, if you're keeping track. I mean, that gives you this really, really creepy sound, right? It just seems weird. And if he had used that main theme regularly in the same key, it would have sounded like this. But once again, creepy, creepy. And then there is also this accompaniment, or kind of almost a counter melody, that is just flat creepy too. That main motive setup when the wall was coming down is essentially what becomes the counter melody to the main theme. But here is why I said that Ramin is telling a story on multiple levels at the same time. He's taken all of these note choices, not just from that exotic scale that I just mentioned, but also from the theme regarding the wall or the Night's Watch itself. That's right, that theme. All of the notes that you need to create this piece are pretty much in the original wall theme. Notes like this. So he's using the wall theme notes to demonstrate it is coming down and to set you up for the big game, the ultimate game, by incorporating those notes into the main theme motive. I mean, it's just brilliant. And just to make you understand that things are pretty dire for Westeros, we get that messed up version for the credits too. And we're going to leave you with that credits cue to end the podcast. But before I do, again, be sure to follow at WinterfellPod on Twitter for any off-season podcasting updates. Support the DVR Podcast Network by visiting dvrpodcast.com or following their Twitter, at DVR Podcast. Or you can help the network out. Help it manage its costs. You can go to patreon.com/DVR and pledge your support for the DVR Podcast Network. And that's going to be it for me. Guess I'll see you when I see you. Take care.